This is Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Carrie Miller. This hour, our favorite home repair guy is back on the hot seat. With the kind of sunny days and mild temperatures that are forecast for this holiday weekend, you really have no excuses for putting off those projects that need finishing by the time the snow flies. Still working on battening down those windows, wondering what to do with the chimney that hasn't been cleaned in years, worrying about how to cut those escalating heating bills. John Trossel to the rescue. He's an FHA-certified home inspector, dishes out home repair advice on our show every now and then. John's in the studio. John, good to have you back. I think the last time you were here, it was summer, and we were talking about how to get your house ready to go for the coming winter, and yet we've had all these mild temperatures.
It's remarkable, so I'm delighted to be here, and we'll talk to some people.
You know, I let me put the number out here, but I also want to talk about what's going on with your business and foreclosures and all that. So we'll put the number out. We'll ask our callers if you have projects that you're in the middle of or that you think it's time to launch and you need some advice, questions about when to bring a contractor in and how to hire one, 800-242-2828. If you're listening in the metro area, 651-227-6000. Online at minnesotapublicradio.org and click on send a question. John Trossel in the studio today. If you have questions about repair projects that you're working on at your house, on your property, questions about how to batten down the hatches for the coming winter, he's here to answer. 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. And if you're online this morning, minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on send a question. John, you're a home inspector by trade, and I was thinking about you the other day when I was reading some of the home sale numbers and what's been happening yet again with the housing market. New home sales at their lowest levels since 1991, existing home sales down 3.1%, which was more than was predicted for October. And I wonder if you're seeing the fallout of some of this in your business, or are the foreclosures really keeping you busy?
That's exactly what's happening, Carrie, is we're kind of switching over to doing a lot of inspections on vacant foreclosed properties. Many of them are homes that are being purchased with a purchase plus rehab type loan, such as FHA's, what they call the 203K loan.
Tell me how that works.
Well, a buyer finds a home that they want, and then typically with the foreclosures, they need some level of rehabilitation. So the buyer is able to get the money to not only purchase it, but under the same first mortgage umbrella, get funds to have a contractor come in and do the rehabilitation to bring the house up to good condition.
Okay. Tell me what you see when you walk through a lot of these foreclosed properties. Are you seeing, you know, damage that the people did as they knew they were going to be leaving the property, or is it really more about neglect?
It's really more neglect. Once in a while, you see that someone's been angry that they've run into this problem. But generally, you see a lot of cosmetic issues. I think people are losing their home and they stop taking care of carpet and, you know, the walls need painting and that sort of thing. And occasionally you get a home that's been vandalized where someone's come in and stolen the copper piping and these sorts of problems.
So what's the first thing you look for when you're coming into a property? Let's say that has sat vacant for 4 or 5 months, which is not unusual in the kind of market that we're in.
Well, of course, with the winter coming on, the first thing I look to do is see if I can get that heat on, because it's typically, believe it or not, colder in that house than it is outside. And so that's what we do. We try to set it up so that the mechanicals are all up and running, because you can do a much better inspection. The primary problem is usually the water service is turned off, and you have to coordinate to get that running. But it's a normal inspection, but we want to get those mechanicals going and then work through and see if there has been any freeze damage. Some of these homes have been sitting there for, you know, 2 years
now.
Right.
Freeze damage. Now, what would that mean?
That would mean that someone didn't winterize the plumbing pipes rapidly enough, and so they were allowed to freeze and burst, which causes, of course, you know, water leaking all over the inside of the walls and ruining insulation and other components. Or even worse is sometimes the older homes with hot water boilers, and you've got radiators that have blown open, and now you've ruined floors, you've ruined walls. They're very expensive systems to replace.
John, if you were going to, as a buyer, let's say this is before you would bring your home inspector in. As a buyer, you're in the market for one of these foreclosed properties, and you're doing the walkthrough yourself. Tell me what you're looking for, that maybe things that as the buyer you should look for that perhaps the home inspector will then follow up to pursue. But
oddly, it's almost the same as if it weren't a foreclosure, in that you're going to go through the property and open and close windows,
okay,
look at the walls, especially go down in that basement, see. Without even being an expert, you can see, wow, is this really old equipment? You know, you can recognize, gee, that's a big old gravity furnace or a newer forced air. And try to go through it a couple times slowly so you can get a feel for, gee, is this just a lot of cosmetic work, or is there a lot of damage? Or do I have a lot of updating to do on windows, heating, plumbing, electrical systems? And you can gather a lot of information from your real estate agent. How long has this foreclosure been in effect?
Which is important to know.
Which is really important to know.
And you should, I mean, I think I hear you saying you should be aware that it's not just going to be the obligation of the mortgage. Here, you should be thinking that there probably are going to have to be some fix-ups and repairs that you're going to have to do.
That's absolutely correct. It's the very, very rare foreclosure you go into that doesn't need something. You kind of hope that it's more cosmetic work. And what I run into a lot, Kerry, is a buyer who thinks they're going to do this weekend, do some painting next weekend, then I'll regrout the tile. And, you know, before long, they've really got to quit their job because it's a full-time job just making their home livable, and it's not realistic.
So be aware of just what jobs lie ahead if you buy one of these.
That's right.
All right.
That's right.
John Trossel in the studio with us this morning. Every now and then he comes in to talk about home repair projects, and we figured it had been since summer since we talked to him last. And so as we batten down the hatches for winter, probably a lot of projects that you've got in the midst of or that you need to get done before the snow flies. 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. And if you're getting a busy signal on the phone lines, be patient, call us back. Or if you're listening online this morning, that's how you can reach us, minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on send a question to Jameel in Richfield. Hi, Jameel.
Well, hi there. How are you?
I'm good. Question for John.
Yes. I have a 1943 house with the original windows on the front part, and we were considering getting new windows. These are old Pellas, geriatric Pellas. But I was looking in the This Old House magazine, and they were saying for antique windows, you can completely dismember them, put them back together, and, even the wood parts, and take the glass out and regrout and all that, or rather re-putty, and they're as good as new with storms. Do you advocate that or not?
Well, I do advocate different versions of that. What I like very much are the jam liner retrofits, and there are some local companies that do that very well and very reasonable, because you're really losing most of your energy around those window openings rather than through even the one layer of glass. So you can end up with a retrofitted window, if you will, that has still the single layer glass, but you've stopped the energy flow leaking from your house by insulating around the window, better weather stripping, and it really modernizes the function of those as well, Jameel.
John, I noticed that Jameel mentioned storm windows. Do people use those anymore?
That's the catch when you're doing especially those sort of jam liner retrofits. You still need storm windows so that you've got the second layer of glass, and which protects typically the old wood windows from the weather, and then the screen.
But do most of the windows, has the technology gotten so good that we really don't need storm windows anymore? I don't know anybody that puts them up anymore.
Well, that's correct. With newer windows, because you're getting a thermal pane glass, and oftentimes, even though you may have wood on the inside of the window for the beautiful look of it, you've got vinyl or some other metal covering on the outside to protect it from the weather, and then just a full screen. But the building code requires that you have the screen and two layers of glass.
Okay. To the phones, to Helen in Crystal. Hi, Helen.
Well, first First of all, I would like to ask about your twins, how they are and how old are they now?
Well, the twins are
Helen, you have a good memory. We've talked to John about that a few times.
The twins are about 4.5 years old now, and they are doing just wonderfully. Riley and Olivia, they've got great vocabularies, and we're teaching them how to use power tools now, so they can do the fix-up at our home.
Helen, I want to let you in a little secret. I asked about that when John came in, and he said that his son is an escape artist, so they have to figure out ways to keep him in the house at night because he's figured out how to work the locks. Can you believe it? All right, your question for him.
Okay, I think I've heard you say that you don't like humidifiers that are incorporated into the furnace, and that's what I have. I have an April Air, and why don't you like them, and what kind of a humidifier do you suggest if I have a 3-bedroom Rambler, 1 floor and a basement?
And is it an older home?
Yeah, probably in 40 years old, I don't know.
Well, it's a situation, Helen, where the central humidifiers can end up being problematic. The reason I asked you about the age of your home is they're more problematic, oddly enough, in newer homes that are constructed so tightly. Your home is likely old enough that, you know, you're leaking some air through around windows, doors, through the walls, not as well insulated as a new home. But the central humidifiers, because basically they're sending warm, more moist air through the ductwork, can more readily pick up any bacteria in that ductwork. So I really like a portable humidifier that's not sending that air through the ductwork and is more readily cleanable, if you will.
John, online here from Joanne in Mankato. What do I do for foundation insulation? A friend suggested that we dig down 20 inches by the exterior foundation and place foam insulation on the exterior side. Yes?
That's a really good way to go. An easy thing also to do and very inexpensive, especially in the older homes, is to put rim joist insulation on top of the foundation on the inside in the unfinished basements. Well, basically at the top of your typically block foundation where you'll see the wood framing sitting on it, there are little gaps between each floor joist, and if you go in your basement, you would easily recognize what I'm speaking of here, and cut either some rigid foam insulation or some just bat, the Pink Panther insulation, if you will, to slide into those little voids, because you have very little room between interior and exterior, so you have a tendency to leak more heat out those areas, and just a very inexpensive application of insulation can save you 8 to 10% a year your bills.
Yeah, so that pays for itself very quickly. And 20 inches, if he's going to go the way that his friend suggested, is about the right depth
that's
to dig
right.
down to?
That's okay. Right, because once you get deeper than that, the ground is really insulating that.
To the phones, to Victoria in Minneapolis. Hi, Victoria.
Hello.
Your
Hello.
Question.
Thank
Hi.
You.
Sure.
Yeah, I have a house in Minneapolis, South Minneapolis, and it was built in 1900-something, maybe 1905 or so. And as all those old homes, it has one of those old limestone foundations, and it crumbles, and it's horrible mess. And somebody had plastered over that, and now the crumbling is pushing the plaster out, and so big chunks of plaster break off.
Oh, that sounds attractive.
Loves to go down there. So how can this be fixed, and who could I hire to do that? What kind of contractor? When I call basement contractors, they're talking about new homes. So that's my question.
Right. Well, you have an interesting situation, and I've lived in those homes, too. My last house, I loved it to death, was a 1907 home in South Minneapolis. So a couple of things you want to understand, Victoria. Number one, of course, it's the lime in that stone that's eating the mortar joints. And really, by now, you basically have a foundation that's kind of just sitting rock on rock. So you've got all that mortar powdered. I could tell you great stories about on my own home about finding some powdered stuff. And boy, we must have put 20 bags of concrete into that wall before we just decided, what are we doing? This, we could go on forever. So you kind of just have to accept that you're basically sitting stone on stone, and you can do some nice cosmetic work on the inside to make that look nice. But you're not really going to bolster up that foundation, if you will, by doing some major new mortar on that. Oftentimes, a handyman or a small cement contractor can do this. I had an older gentleman who'd been in the business his whole life tell me that, look, you want to clean out all that loose stuff, mix up some concrete, stand back about 4 feet, and start flinging it against the wall. Because really, all you're doing is making it cosmetically look good on the inside.
John, when you say she's basically got a foundation one rock on rock, yep. Is that a problem?
It really isn't. Now, typically, the thing has settled as much as it's going to settle, and they're much thicker foundations than you'll find with a block or a poured concrete foundation.
So it's not like the house is going to tilt off the foundation
or anything like that. It's done all that settling that it's typically going to do.
All right. Yeah. Online here from Brian in Pelican Rapids asks, what's the best way to winterize my 1969 mobile home other than caulking and plastic on the windows?
Wow. That's an interesting one, Brian.
That's not the one I thought was going to stump you, John.
I'm wondering how big turkeys get, because if you could get one of those big oven turkey bags and blow it full of warm air and tie it off at the end.
And just fling it over the top of his mobile home?
It's difficult with the mobile homes, of course, because you've got thin walls, you can't get as much insulation in there. You have the same problems you would have on any home. You just have fewer options for increasing that insulation. So I think you're trying to do the right things, Brian, by sealing up windows, doors, and maybe moving into a nice Motel 6 for the winter.
If you're living in the mobile home, right? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. Online with us if you have a question for John Trossel. You've got a project you're in the midst of, or you want to start, or you've given up on, this is a good time to get an answer from John. If you're listening online, minnesotapublicradio.org, and then click on send a question to Mark in Chanhassen. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Carrie.
Question for John.
I think you need to have John on for a full day shows about once a week just to answer all my questions.
I know. just to answer your questions, Mark.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, but what I was wondering, I've got about an 18-year-old house, John, and with the insert-type fireplace, wooden fireplace, and I really enjoy a wood fire, but within a few years of moving in, my wife wouldn't let me have fires anymore because she said they always made the house smoky. And we usually just have them a few times a year, so I'm fairly sure that our chimney isn't plugged up. I mean, at least not from soot. But who would I call to, I want to start having fires again. What time or kind of specialist would I call to tell me what the problem is?
Well, that'll be pretty easy for you, Mark. What you need to find is a good chimney sweep. First of all, even though you're only doing a few fires, and I'm the same way, we do, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and then I fight them off the rest of the winter. But you get your chimney swept, and the chimney sweep can come and typically let you know what's happening with any blockage. If you've got a difficult-to-see chimney shaft going up, they can. Most of them these days are dropping a camera on a cord down that's lighted so that they can let you know what's happening. And for me, it became a situation where I really began to understand how to get that fire going and get some heat going up that chimney before I really got those logs going. I roll up a piece of newspaper and hold it up under the damper to really create a heat chimney, if you will, going up before I get my fire going and I stop smoking up the house that way.
John, what happens when Riley figures out how to build fires in the fireplace?
Yeah, then we're really going to be in trouble.
That's right. That's probably next year.
That's right.
So look out for that. Online here from Heidi in Wilmer, she says, I recently purchased a house and the driveway butts up against the house with about a 1 to 2 inch gap in between. How do I seal from water seepage?
Well, that one can be very easy to do, Heidi. Because you've got a pretty good size gap, and I'm not going to recommend that you put concrete or anything like that in, but what I would do is maybe mix up some mortar mix to fill that gap so that below the top of your crack you've got maybe an inch left. So you're going to put cement in there to act just as a base, and then several companies make a very nice semi-self-leveling sealant. A little bit of alliteration, so it's kind of easy to remember, but it's a semi-self-leveling sealant that you can squeeze in there. It comes typically in an oversized caulk tube, and it's very elastic, and so it'll sit there for 20 years before you have to mess with it again. It'll level on its own, and it'll keep the water out.
And John, that's something she can do herself?
Absolutely.
Just go to the store and buy the stuff and squeeze it out?
That's right. And the only reason you want to put the cement in there is so that you don't have to buy 50 tubes to fill up the void you've got.
To Beth in Minneapolis. Hi, Beth. Thanks for waiting. Your question for John.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
We have a 1980 house, and we've been here 15 years. 10 years, sorry. And we're wanting to remodel the basement. The basement flooring is on, it seems to be carpet. Well, it's carpet that's glued onto plywood that's slightly raised. I don't know if there's insulation under that or what. I want to remove the carpet, and I was wondering what you recommend for a basement floor. I'm really interested in the vinyl plank tiles that you can get, and I was wondering if that would work in a Minnesota basement.
Well, it can. I tell you, I typically recommend that the best flooring in a basement is carpet. Because it's the one flooring, especially if it's not glued down, I wouldn't do that again. It's the one flooring that should you get some basement water in, and I'll remind everyone that if you have a basement, it's susceptible to seepage because it's underground. But should you get some water in, you can pull that carpet back and dry it out. I'd also be a little bit concerned just in your application, Heidi, or was it Beth? I'm sorry.
Yeah, Beth.
Well, can you call Heidi and tell her this too, if you would, that I'm worried about the wood that's under there because that sort of suggests that there's wood under there because someone tried to raise it up, trying to get that carpeting up above past water seepage problem.
So
I might take it all out.
Oh, just take it all out.
Take
the
it
wood
all out
and everything.
Down to the concrete.
Okay.
Yep.
John, while we're talking about flooring, tell me some of the things that, because there are people, we may be among them, who decide at some point to take up your carpeting and put down wood floors.
Right.
A friend of mine just did this. What do you need to know when you're going to do that?
Well, you, of course, one of the first things you have to do is make the delineation of, am I going to go to real hardwood, tongue and groove, the real stuff that's been on, you know, we've been dealing with for decade after decade, of course, or am I going to do the snap together laminate type flooring where you really just have a very thin layer of real wood and they're a snap together floating floor. And with as with all floors, there's really many different levels of quality. There's some of that stuff out now that's warranted for 50 years.
Oh, wow.
So I always recommend go with the finest product you can because it's going to hold up longer. If you're going to, you can very easily install this yourself if you're a bit patient and are willing to read the instructions first.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those have an aluminum oxide in the finish that makes them very, very durable because you're not ever going to be able to sand them.
Okay. You mean you're saying if you choose one of the
if you don't go with the
actual real hardwood.
That's right.
How can you tell the difference when you look at them?
Oh, absolutely. Just by the way the seaming is working.
But I mean luster-wise and
no, not if you're if you get a really high quality laminate, you really can't tell the difference in because you are seeing actual real wood whether it's cherry or oak or bamboo.
Okay. What about green flooring? I should ask you about that. How much do you know about that?
I don't know an awful lot about it. You know, it's a terrible answer, Carrie, but I tell people, gee, I'm so busy out there doing my work that it's hard to keep up with research.
There are a lot of new products on that. So
there are.
But there's a lot of information on it online. Okay.
I'm going to have Riley read that stuff and inform me. Olivia can help.
Got it. Online here from Arnie in St. Paul says, bought a house 3 years ago with a gas fireplace. We've never used it because it has a leaky gas regulator and has been shut off. It's an old house. He asks, is it a big fix?
I would tend to get a fireplace company out there and think about replacing the whole darn thing. Get them to inspect your regulator and of course, plan on replacing that component or at least, you know, up your health insurance, one of the two. But the problem with the old gas fireplaces is that with new technology, they have been made to be a much safer product. Oftentimes, the older ones, you've got your whole control system right in the same chamber as the fire where the new ones, it's separated nicely. So they're much safer.
So you would say...
I'd say replacing the whole thing. And they're not terribly expensive just in terms of the fact that you're going to have low energy costs with a gas fireplace. You know, I've probably said on your show before, Carrie, that the best fireplaces come in DVD and VHS, and then you go to gas.
Yes, and yes, you've said that, and yes, I don't believe it. So there, John, you just turn on the Yule log and be happy. That's what you tell your wife, right?
That's exactly it.
To the phones, to Josh in Plymouth. Hi, Josh.
Oh, hello. I have a 85 house built in 85, and we put a new roof on summer of 07, and we love the look of it. However, we're having some trouble with one of the gutters that drains on the roof is leaving a green stain on our shingles, and it's one of those projects that I should have done earlier this summer, but I'm wondering if there's anything I can do now to stop that, or is it over? It's going to ruin the shingles, or what are your tips there?
Well, I don't think it's going to really ruin the shingles. There are some products you can get. They're a bit of a chemical wash, of course, and there are companies that will come out and do that for you to get that staining, that fungus off of there. You know, you drive around Minnesota, especially with the light-colored roofs, and you see this sort of covered black film all over roofs. I grew up in Denver. We didn't see that. It's something that's more local to the Midwest, but that stuff can be washed off. And, you know, you've got your roof is outside and you've got Mother Nature out there. So it's really hard to fight her all the time.
So you're saying that he probably has to just live with the staining?
To a degree, it's a cosmetic thing. And I would probably be more prone to live with it myself. But I can understand that people want to get rid of it. And you're capable of having that done as well.
That's just what we want, John, lowering the standards here show. Well. Thank you. Thank you for that. To the phones, to Cherie in Zumbro Falls. Hi, thanks for waiting, Cherie.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a single mom. I live in a 1908 Victorian house with old windows. I was wondering, old-fashioned putty versus, I understand there's a new caulk that you can peel off in the summer. Have you heard of that?
Absolutely. It's terrific. When I had my old 1907 house, it's exactly what I used. It's a clear silicone-based caulk, and it's not going to pull away any paint or any finish. Available at any hardware store. All you have to do is ask, and they'll direct you right to it. It's becoming increasingly popular, and it's a very good energy-saving tactic. It doesn't quite do what the window film that you can put on and kind of shrink with the hairdryer does, because that insulates a little bit more. But this is a great way to stop the air seepage, and again, that is your major source of heat loss. So.
Sure. And then quickly, I've got a boiler in the basement. I was just wondering about upkeep. I've got radiant heat, LP gas. Do I need to get a boiler inspector, or what's your take on that?
I would get that thing serviced on a yearly basis, and boilers are unique in that if you do that yearly servicing, and then about every 5 years get what we call a major servicing, where the heating contractor will come in and kind of dismantle the thing and replace any worn-out parts, that boiler can last you a lifetime.
And then I just called about the roof. I had the same thing, but someone...
Cherie, I think you need a handyman.
Sorry, I do.
No problem.
I understood zinc strips take care of the fungal problem. I don't know if they do or not, but that's what I was told.
I'm not going to be able to give you a really informed answer on that.
Cherie, call a handyman.
Yep.
They may be able to help. But thanks for the calls.
Thank you so
we
much.
Appreciate it. Let me follow up on the furnace question, John, that she asked. I know you're a big fan of servicing furnaces, even if they're relatively new.
Right.
Tell me what actually happens on a furnace service. So you make sure you're getting your bang for the buck when you do that.
Well, what's going to go on, and it depends on the age. With newer furnaces, and I see this all the time. I did an inspection last week that the selling side was stunned that, hey, we can't get any heat out of this thing. It wanted to light, but you get control modules that go out on you. You know, I tell almost every client that, look, it's not the 72 Oldsmobile you're seeing on the side of the highway. It's the 2005 Jeep Cherokee because some module went out. So the new ones, you know, the electronic ignition, the little control box goes out on them. And then, of course, older ones, you've got, you know, burners that are getting bad. And you have lots of components, whether it's old or new, that can start wearing out. Some of them just need to be cleaned up. And sometimes you just need that contractor in there to tweak the controls a little bit. If you deal with good quality, reputable companies, they're just going to go front to back, top to bottom through that unit and make sure all of the components are doing what they're supposed to do.
I was going to ask you, who do you call to have that done?
Yeah, I'm really a believer in, with all contractors in general, and certainly with that sort of servicing work, is sometimes you have to fish around and you might go through two or three before you find someone that you're really happy with.
Okay.
I've said before, get people by referral. You know, talk to your neighbor that's lived in their house for 40 years down the block or even right next door, and gee, who do they use? They've probably come upon someone that's very reliable, and those people would be happy to help you as well.
Okay. To the phones here to Jean in Sioux Center. Hi, Jean.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, John, if it's a good thing to wrap your outside air conditioning unit before the winter.
Well, first of all, Jean, it's really not typically necessary these days. I get that question a lot, and I joke back to people that, gee, does it rain in the summer and get your air conditioner wet? So, you know, that snow is just the frozen rain. The little bit of an advantage that you get is you do keep the inside of that cover and thus the fan and the various components in there a little bit cleaner. Once in a while, you need a serviceman to come out and clean those things in there anyway. So it doesn't hurt to wrap it, but it's unnecessary.
Online here, John, from Lisa in Minneapolis, she says, we have a 1920s cabin with a small original stone basement. A musty smell is filling the whole cabin. We run a dehumidifier with no help. What can we do? What would be creating the musty smell, do you think?
Oftentimes what you get in that situation is that there is no air flow underneath that floor in that little crawl space area. And so you're going to get condensate happening just because of the change in temperatures. And then that moisture can't evaporate. And over time, it just starts getting smellier and smellier and smellier. So you may have to, you know, I would go around the perimeter of that cabin and see if, oh, yep, that guy's right. We don't have any airflow in here.
What do you do about it, though?
Well, you're going to have to open up some holes and screen over them so that it doesn't turn out to be a hotel for all the little furry critters in the area, but screen that off so that you get some airflow under there.
And John, go ahead.
And it may even mean that you have to now insulate up under your floor a little better if you're going to be up there in the
wintertime.
Got it,
because you're going to have cold air flowing through the bottom there. John Trossel is with us, home repair extraordinaire guy. Who gives us lots of advice. He's an FHA certified home inspector, comes in every now and then to answer your questions and your calls about home repair projects. If you want to join us, 800-242-2828, Metro 651-227-6000. And if you're listening online this morning, you have some questions, send them in, minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on send a question. By the way, my interview with Joan Baez coming up at 10 o'clock. Great conversation. She was in the studio here 2 weeks or so ago when she was in town to play. And we just had a wonderful discussion. We listened to music together. She has a new CD out. We talked about the arc of a career that has lasted 50 years. So I hope if you're listening this morning, you'll stay tuned for Joan Baez at 10. To the phones, to Dan in Hudson. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, sure.
I have a question. I have a home built in 1979, and a front step it's just a 2 to 3 step going into the front entryway, but with a landing that's separated from the actual step and pulled away, kind of sunken in. And I'm wondering if there's a way it's still intact as one piece. Is it better to just take out that cement slab or somehow raise it up? And if that's the case, can it be done by myself, or would I need a professional, I guess, at that point?
It's possible to do it by yourself, Dan, but it's one of those jobs that were at my home. I would be probably calling a mud jacking company, because if they can access it, they can come in and raise that pretty readily. Many of those companies guarantee that work for life. And because you've got it nailed, that's exactly what happened. That thing settled and pulled away from the wall. But it's a lot of physical labor for you to try to dig under there, support that thing, bring in more dirt, and you're probably not going to have the success that the contractor would.
What would something like that cost, John? That seems like a big operation.
Well, it's going to probably run you a few hundred dollars, but
that's not bad
compared to the replacement cost.
Online here from Chet in St. Paul, who wonders, is there an approved way to seal lead-based paint on walls and windows that are flaking? Should you have lead-based paint on your walls and windows?
Well, any home, of course, built before 1978 you don't even have to have it tested.
Okay.
There is going to be lead. And I may have pointed out to you before, France and Germany outlawed that paint in 1850. And
wow.
So we just wanted to think about it for another 128
yeah.
years. Really, the most economical and it's very effective way that we suggest with older homes, when you have that flaking paint, and you can get on health department websites, even your painting stores will help you with the methodology for this. But we encapsulate by scraping, priming, cleaning up really well, and painting over the lead-based paint with new paint. The cost of abatement is unbelievably high, and it's just so difficult as a homeowner to be able to afford that, and encapsulation is fine. I bring this up in the workshops I teach, and I remind people that, look, your kids are eating the paint chips. They're not chewing on the woodwork.
Yeah.
And if they are, there's great counseling
yeah.
for them anyways.
To the phones, to Lisa in Minneapolis. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for waiting.
Oh, thank you. I have a 1906 home. I've lived here for 10 years, and I live with critters. And my question is, I don't know even who to call to seal my house up.
What kind of critters, by the way?
I'm sure I have squirrels, or I know I have squirrels, and I have mice. I put decon out. I'm about to get a rifle and start shooting them. I mean,
so things are getting extreme there. Okay. What do you think, John?
Well, you could start with the National Rifle Association. And
all right.
If you wanted to go a little less violently, I suppose, you could, a good small contractor. There's nothing wrong with the big companies, but they're looking for bigger projects typically. But a good small contractor can come around and help you locate all of the little areas that these critters can get in. You know, you see it with the old houses with the squirrels have chewed through just gaps in your eave joints. Mice, because they have double jointed necks, can get into any half inch crack.
Are you kidding about that? Are you serious?
It's absolutely true. Once they get their head
double jointed necks.
In. Yes, yes.
Is this something you've tested yourself?
No, I think I heard it on NPR.
You did not. So you're saying hire a small contractor to
That's
come
right,
in
that
and
can come in and help you seal those areas up. And it can take a little work because once you even close them up, these critters have gotten used to your home, they like it, and they're going to want to come back in.
They're setting up shop there.
That's right.
Online here, John, and we've talked about this before, about whether it's really worth it to have your duct work clean, because
sure.
there's all those companies that do a lot of advertising
right.
to get you to do that. So a couple of questions here on that. From Mike in West St. Paul, he wants to know, what is your opinion on getting heating duct work cleaned in a 60-year-old home with a newly installed forced air furnace? And then from Barbara, she says she lives in a 1941 house with forced air heat. She's lived there for 42 years, never had the ducts cleaned. Is it really necessary?
In both of those situations, I would say that it's a good idea to do that.
Really?
Well, where you've lived there for 42 years and it hasn't been done, it just might be time. And then even though you've had a new furnace put in the other application, if they didn't do new duct work, which I would imagine they did not, it's always a good idea to get that done once. And then I'm a believer in a pretty big gap between cleanings. And I'm also a believer in being careful when you're being offered an antibacterial fog, that you remember that, gee, there's going to be residue of that treatment in that ductwork afterwards, so that when you're running your AC or your heat, you're running that stuff out into your air. So
you say turn that down.
I would turn that down.
The fog yep. treatment.
That's
okay.
right.
What should something like that cost, do you know?
It can run anywhere from... Gee, I think I've paid $120 all the way up to many hundreds of dollars, depending upon the company. you know, I'm going to probably get calls at home from some of these companies when I get out of here today. But you, to me, it's a service. You also have to be a little bit careful that you want to be around when they do this.
Why?
Well, because you don't want a couple of guys down in the basement running a machine, playing cards, and then, you know, coming back up until you're all done. So, because I've had that happen to me.
You have?
I have.
Where you happened to go down there and they were...
It's not that they were playing cards. I think actually they were playing jacks.
Yeah.
But no, when I came home and when I looked at the job they had done, and they, of course, had packed up and gone and we had paid them, that I kind of went, well, these guys didn't really clean anything.
Yeah.
So
we'll put your address on our website so they know where to find you. Okay. Just to be helpful. To the phones to Roger and Crystal. Hi, Roger.
Good morning, John. I got a scenario for you with regards to my home. It's a built in 1969 Rambler hip roof. This is basically, being that the days are a little bit warmer in our climate versus humidity, I've installed a powered roof vent, which is approximately a third larger than the square footage of the attic. The recommendation was for the R61 passive vents that I had, as well as the ridge vents, were to be sealed off so that you get the proper draw from the soffit venting up through the attic vent. Now, I monitor the attic as well as the exterior remotely to see the comparison of the effectiveness of this power roof vent.
Roger, can I ask you what the question is here for John?
The question is regards to... The humidity in the house is like about 34, yet the attic is at about 76. And one, does it make sense to run the power roof vent when your exterior humidity is like at about 78? The attic is, the vent is set up to turn on at 75%. And does it make more sense to open up the R61 so I get more draw?
Okay.
I don't seem to be getting the... power venting of the humidity out of the attic.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Can you repeat that, Roger?
Don't you dare.
Well, Roger, what's going through my mind is I'm wondering if your e-vents are really open and that, you know, the air is flowing in there. So that's the first thing I would be checking. But I think your thinking is along the right direction that, gee, you know, you might not really be getting the airflow that your system now is designed to produce because you've got too high a level of humidity in that attic. And so I would once again check to make sure that those e-vents are really open and allowing air to come through. And I would be thinking about adjusting, you know, maybe opening up a couple of those R61s to ensure that you are getting plenty of airflow through there because you're holding too much humidity up in that attic space.
John, here's Laura in Minneapolis. She says, I'm an architect and we specify zinc strip installation at ridge lines to deter organic growth on wood shingles. It should also work on asphalt. I think that's the answer to
that
a
absolutely is
question
the answer
about
to the
staining
to the earlier
or,
question.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Thank
good.
You so,
so
much,
hope,
Laura.
Hope he's still listening. To Sarah in Minneapolis. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Question for John.
Yeah, I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller, so I'm sorry if I stumble on my words.
Well, call back again, okay, sometime?
Yeah, John, I actually took one of your home stretch classes, which allowed me to buy my first foreclosed property in South Minneapolis this summer, a story-and-a-half bungalow, 1921. We've got the first floor finished, but the half-story upstairs does not have a heat source at all, and as the winter is getting colder, so is the upstairs. The plumber thinks we should put a radiator in. My handy uncle thinks we should try in-floor, like the radiant heat. My dad thinks we should put a wood stove up there. Somebody else thinks we should put, like, cut holes and just let the air, like the heat, flow up from the first floor. What are your thoughts?
And I take it you have a hot water boiler for heat. You've got radiators.
Yes.
I would listen to your plumber.
Okay.
I think that's
put one unit up in the... upstairs.
Yep, it may cost you a little bit more to go that direction, but I think in the long run you'll find that that makes you the happiest, and that's the way it would have been done had that area been finished when that home was first constructed. All of the other methods, you know, have their advantages and their drawbacks. If I had to choose a backup to that, I would go with the radiant situation, but anytime you're heating with electricity, you're going to be paying more.
Does that help, Laura or Sarah?
What's that?
That helps, Sarah?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I had one question about the radiant floor.
Okay.
Do you know anything about putting the water in that would use the same system as a boiler?
That is a good answer. However, I think you'll find that it's more expensive to go that way. And I think that if you go with just adding a radiator, chasing the pipes up into that area and adding a radiator, it'll be less costly. If you think you're going to be in the house for a long time, you can certainly explore the idea of using that water system radiantly in the floors.
John, what do you do if, as we head into winter and you suspect perhaps you have water leakage somewhere? I know you talk about this in the basement, but I don't know. What if you're seeing signs of it in other parts of the house? Urgent that you get this solved before winter, and how do you do that?
Well, I would definitely get it solved before winter because you, of course, have a breach in the outside envelope of your home.
Right.
And if you keep letting that water in, which, you know, to me, that means that you either are having leakage in your roof or the flashings around your roof or even around some windows, all of the typically the solutions are going to be pretty inexpensive unless your roof is just gone and you need a new roof. But the work is inexpensive, and it's going to save you lots of money. If you have water coming in all winter, that's got months to do serious damage.
So get it solved.
Get it done.
I mean,
don't wait.
Okay.
That's right.
Online here from Steve in Duluth wants to know what your opinion is about foam insulation being injected into an existing home.
This is of course, gaining in popularity, Steve, and this is different foam insulation than we had around decades ago. If you remember, it went away because there were problems with the outgassing of formaldehyde and this sort of thing. This isn't happening now. It is a really good bang for your buck method. I've got a friend who has an 1880s home over on the near north side, beautiful house. He did major remodeling and foamed the whole thing. And this was, gee whiz, 10 years ago that he did this. And he is extremely happy with it. The cost of doing it has come down. They can inject more easily now. They don't have to even open up the walls the way my friend had to have it done. So if you're interested in paying for something like that, and again, if you're going to be in your home for a long time so that you get the energy savings to pay for that project over the years, I would certainly be exploring that option.
To the phones to Rick in Cross Lake. Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Hi, Rick. Your question for John.
Yeah, I have a 1930 log cabin, and it has a bathroom that we added on about 15 years ago, and now the bathroom's on a concrete slab. And I was looking into putting in a heated floor and wondering whether the kits that you can buy now would work for me. I could do it myself, or whether I should have a contractor come and do it.
Oh, I think if you're pretty handy that you can very readily do that yourself. That is a nice application for the little heat mats I'm sure you're talking about that you're going to put in and then put tile or some other type of flooring over it, and that's a great way to go.
Online here, John, from Marcia in Roseville, she says she has a 20-year-old water heater. It works fine for now. Should she begin to think about replacing it, how to shop for that, and how to decide what to put in?
Well,
is 20 years usually about the life of a water heater?
That's right. It can vary, of course, Carrie, depending on how much moisture there is in the area where it's located,
okay,
because water heaters have a tendency to rust and then the tank bursts. I warn people that, we can't tell you exactly what date that water heater is going to go out, but I can tell you what day. The day of your cousin's wedding when you absolutely
yeah,
need to have a bath or a shower. So I'm big on a preemptive replacement of water heaters. I've had plumbers tell me that these days, in general, one water heater is as good as the next. You have a tendency to have these units coming out of the same factories. And, Joe, where's this one going? All right, that's the label that goes on it. So, and then I would shop around for the price of installation, because this plumber may be charging you $600, including, the water heater and the labor to put in a new water heater, and the other guy charging you $12 for basically the same application.
So, John, you're also really saying that the quality of the water heaters themselves does not differ that much?
Not so much these days, no.
Hmm. Let me take another call here to Corey in Minneapolis. Hi, Corey.
Good morning.
Hi.
John, I have a 1926 house in North Minneapolis, and it has absolutely no insulation whatsoever. I don't have a lot of money to spend on it right now, so I'm wondering if you could give a few suggestions incrementally. What would be the cheapest, most short-term fix I could do to add a little bit of insulation, whether it's in all the areas, the walls, the ceiling, the basement, or just in one? And what would maybe the next step and the final step be?
Well, let's eliminate the walls first because it's going to be a very, very long payback. I would be looking at the attic insulation, and then I would be looking at making sure that your windows and doors are sealed up nicely. As we've said many times on this show, if you have the old double-hung windows with the sash cords, I would first look at attic insulation and then caulking and sealing around windows, and then in the future retrofitting those windows and generally staying away from the wall insulation because of the long payback.
You wouldn't do it?
No, it's typically a 17 to 23 year payback in fuel savings, and oftentimes you're not going to be in that house that long. If you're not doing a major rehab project, it's just too costly in terms of the energy savings.
Here's another question that kind of goes to that from Brian in St. Paul. He says, my 750 square foot home is heated poorly by baseboard heaters. Am I better to replace the heaters with better ones or put in an actual furnace?
I would be putting in an actual system because it sounds like what you've got are baseboard electric heaters. The advantage with heating by electricity is you're using 100% of the energy that you're paying for. The disadvantage is that it's more expensive. So I would be, if you're going to be in there any amount of time, I would be biting the bullet and putting in an actual central gas-fired system of
some
type.
What do you think of wood stoves in general? We usually get questions about these, and we have a question here from somebody who asks, don't you think that a modern freestanding wood-burning stove that uses outside air for combustion can be efficient? In general, what do you think?
I think that that's a good way to go. I would always have some sort of a backup system, of course, that's fueled by natural gas to go along with that. But it's a good way to go because you're heating radiantly. It's comfortable heat. You're heating your home molecule by molecule. And if you don't mind doing the upkeep and keeping the thing cleaned, and you know the you've got them that burn corn cobs, the pellets, the wood, they can be very, very efficient because you're really controlling the airflow into the unit, and one little log can oftentimes last you a lot longer than you ever thought it could and really keep a whole pretty large space warm for a long time.
John, always good to see you. The hour flies, doesn't
it? It is so fun.
When you're on.
So thankful you have me here.
Keep a handle on those twins. And how about if we see you late winter, early spring? How
terrific
would that be as we're looking at more projects
I
to
will
do?
Look forward to it, Carrie.
Thanks, John, very much. Coming up at 10 o'clock, my interview with Joan Baez. I hope you'll stay tuned for that. That's at 10. This is Mid-Morning.